irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Rooster.
Eddie Pence.
That's the rooster.
The rooster. It's like our mascot, Eddie.
He's a cock.
Be nice.
Yeah,
I thought you'd want to start with a little cock.
A little bit. Everybody likes to start with a little cock.
You know what's so crazy? Whenever I listen to the theme song, like I didn't play one instrument for that theme song, which is a little bit
scary. It's GarageBand, right? You used a GarageBand.
I used a GarageBand on the iPad, and basically you can do all the bends and everything, like using, you know, you kind of have to know a little bit about guitar, but really you don't because...
Music of the future.
You're just sliding your hand from, you know, like, so it's kind of crazy that you could just do that. I was just listening to that and thinking, man, that's scary that I can be
completely obsolete. Soon.
Obsolete, yeah, totally obsolete.
Obsolete.
How was your week?
It's all right.
What did you do?
Mm-hmm.
You got a show tomorrow, right?
Possibly.
Oh,
well, I think so. I'm just waiting for the confirmation.
It's a secret.
I think so. It's a secret show. I don't want anybody there.
It's a the venue rhymes with Schmaff.
Schmaff Factory? Yeah.
Yes.
Laugh Factory.
I don't know if you guys can...
I don't know if I can say Laugh Factory. Laugh Factory, hopefully tomorrow, 8 o'clock.
Yeah. Well, we hope you may be there.
I don't know.
He may or may not.
I may not.
Be there.
I may not be there.
You know, I forgot to talk about this last week, but I was... 2 weeks ago, I got the chance to go see Ziggy Marley perform at the Spotlight.
Perform your big song?
Yeah. Nice. Dude, it was amazing because...
Did he start the show with Start It Up?
He started the show with Start It Up.
Well, you'd have to start the show with Start It Up.
Yeah, but he didn't have to.
He'd have to.
Because I get that he
started up.
Well, but he could have started the record that way, like which he did.
Yeah.
But he could have not done that.
Nah.
But it was pretty awesome that he did. And it was amazing because, you know, I got to, you know, watch his sound check.
Uh-huh.
And then he came up to us and he was like, guys, I love the song Start It Up. Send me more, man. Send me more. And I was like, we got more, man. We got more. It was like, dude, I'm talking to Ziggy Marley. This is crazy.
Maybe you can write all his songs.
It was, you know, it was crazy. And the really crazy thing, too, he sold it out, and it was in the desert. And, man, I don't know how far to the desert you've ever gone, but I'd never been to the Spotlight 29 Casino.
Oh, I know where the Spotlight is.
It's like the edge of the desert.
I know where the Spotlight 29 is.
Deep in the desert. Deep in the heart of the desert, people. Huh. But it was amazing. I mean, and, man, like, I was watching him sing this track, and I was having this surreal moment. I was like, dude, this is a melody that I just, like, came up with in... You know,
in the shower?
Not in the shower. In my little office, like in the middle of the night. Like, yeah, maybe this will work. And then seeing it all develop with the singers and the lights and everything, I was like, what a trip, man.
Like, oh, I wish that was me up there.
No, you know, the funny thing is, it's like usually when I write a song and I play it with a band, you're in the song. You like live in the song.
Uh-huh.
And you present it and you experience it. But to be outside of it and just watch. And you knew this, like I knew all the changes and stuff. But to experience that from the audience as an outsider,
mm-hmm.
even though you're like, you know what's going on the inside, it was surreal, man.
Mm.
Super, super surreal. And then, the highlight of the night,
yeah.
I went to the blackjack tables.
How would you walk away with, or without?
$350, buddy.
$350.
You know that I always lose at the tables. That's like my itch. I love to gamble.
I have a great, I went to the Vegas one time, near 2000. I'm driving to Vegas. I'm meeting friends there for the Super Bowl. I think it was Ravens Giants. And we're driving, and the alternator in my car dies right before the exit in Vegas.
Ooh.
So I have enough gas or enough power left in my battery to pull into that, like the shitty casino. No, I was closer than that. I was like by the Welcome to Las Vegas sign,
like the South Point,
where right when you pull into the Vegas strip, like right there, some shitty like convenience store and a has slot machines in it. And I parked my car there, and then I walked to the MGM because that's where everyone was staying. And so right now I'm already down, like, I've already lost all this money. My alternator's gone.
Right.
I brought $500 to gamble with.
Oh, my God.
So I go and I start gambling just because I'm just pissed. I just want to get my mind off of it. And I lose $500 in 23 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Maybe. And so my friend who worked at AOL at the time, and their stock had just split for the third time that year. It was like that time when like AOL was just like through the roof.
Were you like, I'm done.
I was about to do that to other people. I wasn't going to kill myself. And then so he's like drunk, and he's just like stacks of $100 chips. And he's like, here. And he just flicks me a $100 chip. I'm broke at this point. I'm like, how am I going to get my car fixed and go home?
Right.
He tells me, I turned that $100 chip into $3,000.
Holy shit.
In about 45 minutes.
Dude.
How on blackjack. Because I had nothing to lose.
Our studio audience loves that. They're big gamblers.
I had nothing to lose. So I just, every time I won, I would just let it ride. I kept doubling the bet. Because I had nothing to lose.
So you went on a run. That's what happened to me. But
$3,000.
Dude, what was the most you bet on a hand?
Probably $500.
Oh, my God.
Because it wasn't my money at that point. It was
just
like,
but
fuck
it still is.
I was just like, fuck it.
So when were you up 1,000, why didn't you just walk away then?
Because I was still hot, and I was still betting like $100 hands.
Dude.
And you'd win, and you'd be $200, and you'd take $100 off and leave $100 on the table, and you'd keep.
That is.
And you get up to $3,000, and then I went and fixed my car the next morning, $500. I still had $2,500. I put $2,000 away, and I just used $500 for this a weekend. And I was pissed that I didn't fucking bet on the Rams or the Ravens that weekend.
Yep.
I was in line with the money. I'm like, I'm going to go lay everything on the Ravens, and I didn't do it.
No, I wouldn't have laid everything on the Ravens.
Why? It's not my money.
Because if you lost
found
that,
money at that point.
You know, there's a crazy story about
I got
some
my
guy.
Car paid for. It was free money
at
that point.
That's true. Yeah, but you know what?
I could have doubled that. I could have left with $4,000.
There's a story. It's like a legendary. I don't know if it's myth or like straight up, but some guy put $1,000 on the Patriots to go 16-0 and win the Super Bowl. So they went 16-0, and then they won all the playoff games. And a week before the Super Bowl, I think his bet was up to something like $11 million.
And the casino was like,
"We'll
pay you out."
Called
right
him. They're like, "We'll pay you out $3 million or $5 million if you just take your money right now." And he said no, and then he lost. And it's like, dude, I would have taken that $5 million and bet like half of it on the.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Nobody thought. The
nobody
Patriots
thought.
Were gonna
I know,
lose
and,
it,
and especially the, what about the second time, dude? The second time when the Giants beat them again, it was like.
Yeah, but that wasn't as shocking.
Yeah, but still, there was a chance that you thought it was going to be a fluke, and then they won again. It was
that was a much more even contest than going into it. I think the Giants are actually favored in some of the.
I mean, that's going to be like the no matter what the Patriots ever.
Oh, that yeah, he's waking up in cold sweats for the rest of his life.
Man,
he's never sleeping solidly again.
And it's just like one game. You know, our buddy Joe, he's a big Giants fan. Yeah. He's got a Giants shirt that says it says like 18-1 or 19-1.
Yeah,
and it's in the Giants colors. It's like that's a dick move.
Whatever.
Any other fun plans for the week? The weekend?
No, I told my kids.
Oh, wait, you just went on some trip.
Where did I go?
Where did you go with Trey? I saw it on Facebook. You,
Malibu Creek Canyon?
Yeah, you went
it's
on a little.
It's not a trip. It's 20 minutes north on the 101.
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
It's not a trip.
Wow, it looked like a trip.
No, it's where they film MASH. Have you ever been up there?
No, but tell me about it.
It's where they film MASH.
Well, can you hum me the theme song?
It's the most boring. It's like that and Taxi are the most boring theme
Taxi's
songs.
Taxi's terrible. At least,
so is MASH.
At least
both,
MASH is a little bit more
they
melodic.
Both make you want to kill yourself.
What's your favorite TV show theme song?
Three's Company.
Three's Company. That's a good one. That's funky. Wow, 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 wow. That's a good one.
Just a great sitcom.
Dude, I think Cheers is my number one.
Cheers is like, you get, like, I like Cheers shit, and you get nostalgic and it makes you feel sad. But, like, Three's Company, it's like, it gets you in the mood for comedy when you're watching. You're like,
yeah.
I'm ready to watch it.
That's true.
I'm ready to watch
a great
Jack
show.
Tripper do something
that was,
stupid.
Jack Tripper, oh, man. Well, that was one of my favorite shows ever.
Yeah.
And nobody knows. Like, you know what I was
that
thinking
one
about?
Episode when he either got drunk or he was on some sort of medication at a party. And it was like one of the greatest physical comedy bits ever seen on TV. Negotiating that party.
Did you ever see when he was like a Shogun chef?
No.
Same thing. It was like the most physical comedic thing even to this day that I've seen. And like a lot of the stuff was just improvised and just happened to get on tape and make the final, you know, edit. But, man.
Can't believe we're talking about Three's Company.
Dude, why not, man? Come on.
Just,
but
it's like
the sequel show, what was it?
Old.
Three's a Crowd or whatever? Or
Two's Company?
Two's, no. It was,
Three's a Crowd?
No, it's Three's a Crowd. Company. And it was
Three's
it was,
a Crowd?
But it was Three's a Crowd.
Yeah, that's where he moved in with his girlfriend.
That was bad. It was
but so were the, bad. Did you see the Ropers? The Ropers had their own.
Oh, I didn't know
show.
That. No.
Yeah, the Ropers had their own show.
Really?
Yeah, when they left, it was a show called The Ropers.
You know, the funny thing is, it's like when we were
kids. Every show back then had like three spinoffs.
Of course. But when we were kids, like that was the big rerun. That and Brady Bunch. And like now it's like Friends Laverne and Seinfeld. And you know, like you don't see those old school shows anymore. Bring it back. Bring it back, Eddie. Come on now. Come on. Anyways, it looks like our special guests have arrived. Mr. Todd Berger, right?
Yes. Hello.
And Greg.
George.
Damn it.
Damn it. Yes, you don't even know their fucking names.
You know what? I knew. I even walked in the door and I said, George, Todd.
If it helps, I have a secret identity, Greg. So maybe that's how you know.
See?
Me.
That's it.
And Greg.
George Porter.
I'm George Porter.
Yeah. Todd Berger. Yeah.
Is your last name on your shirt?
I am.
Or is that just a coincidence?
I happen to be wearing a shirt that also has my last name on it, which happens to be the name of a Canadian airline.
Oh, okay. So you're not just not.
And actually, Todd got me that shirt. Yes. So
I saw the shirt at a thrift store.
Like, I must.
And I was like, that's my friend's last
name. Are they
name.
Still in existence?
I believe they're quite
Fly popular. Porter.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we're, you know.
You should invest in them or something.
I think, yeah. Just, I'll
just
put
throw that around. Flyporter.com.
It's like going in the desert, you know, with a bunch of money and coming back with a small fortune.
Small fortune.
My
indeed.
Wife's name is Helena. It looks like Helena. And the minor league baseball team in Helena,
Montana
is the Brewers. So it just says Helena really big, like all their t-shirts and sweatshirts. So for her birthday 1 year, I got her a giant sweatshirt that just had her name on it. She's never worn it. Like,
oh. So this is just so what you do. She's you like, just no. Go around finding
I will not wear that.
People's names on shirts and giving them.
But see, your butt's yeah. Like, yeah, I'll wear that yeah. Shit.
All right.
Brown's my color.
I'll wear this defunct airline t-shirt you found in the thrift store.
It's my lucky charm, you know? What can I say?
It's you're going for a vintage vibe mm-hmm. Slash Canadian always. Airline mm-hmm. Supporter, and yep. You nailed it, dude. You
that,
nailed
I'm
it.
I'm so glad that you recognize that, because a lot of people don't see that. I, this is something I look for a lot. It's kind of my subculture, you know?
You know what? It's there's so much stuff I want to talk about with these guys. They have so
let's
much
keep talking
cool
about shirts.
Stuff going on.
If you're but, so eager to talk about things.
Well, because they have this cool play. Let's talk about this play for a quick second. So you guys are debuting this play. It's based on a movie that
yes.
Todd, you directed. And
I wrote and directed a feature film.
What's it called?
It's called It's a Disaster. Came out in 2013. Premiered at the LA Film Festival in 2012.
Is it a feature, not a short?
It's a feature film. It's available wherever movies are available right now. It stars Julia Stiles, America Ferrera, David Cross.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I'm in it.
Great cast.
I'm in it for like 5 minutes.
Of course you're
like me. You wrote yourself into your own movie.
I did.
You have to.
And that's so Hitchcock of you.
So it premiered in 2012 at the LA Film Festival. Played a bunch of festivals, got distribution, played like 30 cities in like art house cinemas. Came out on Netflix, iTunes, all that. And then... So the entire movie is set in one house. It's about a bunch of people who get together for a Sunday brunch. And then the next door neighbor comes in 20 minutes into the movie, played by me, and informs them that the bombs have fallen. Like, the city's under attack.
So your character sets everything in motion.
Yeah. I walk in a hazmat suit.
Who was that messenger? He was
and
amazing.
I'm like, have you guys not noticed that the power went out and the phone lines are out? And yeah, we're under attack, and you guys have to stay inside until the government comes by. It's a comedy. So there are these eight characters who are stuck in a house for the next hour and a half as maybe the world's ending. Like, they're not sure. Maybe it's World War III. So for years, I've gotten emails from people who've seen the movie and said, is there a play version. Well, the first thing they asked, is this based on a play? Because it feels like it's kind of based on a play.
Well, yeah, right. One setting right. Seems like it's a...
So then they were like, and I was like, no, I actually just wrote it as something I could do cheap with my friends, and then we got actors attached, so we made it a little bigger. And they're like, well, is there an adaptable version? Because, like, my high school would love to put it on, or, like, my theater troupe would love to put it
That's
on.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And so, finally, you know, the producers of the film realized that if you have the rights to the film, you have so many years to mount it as a stage production to retain the rights to it. And they're like, well, we should just do it ourselves. Like, let's mount a production, and then maybe if it goes well, we can...
get a movie made out of it.
Yeah.
We can have places around the world.
That'd be awesome.
A global network.
Are you just like, you all can do the plays if I can play my own self in the
well,
movie?
Well, it's like the producers where it was a play... Based on a movie.
It's a movie based on a play.
And then they
based
made a movie.
Yeah, a musical.
Yeah. But so we went to the producers of the film and I, who are also Kevin Brennan and Jeff Grace, who are also in the movie. We went to our friend Monica, who happens to be married to my friend George. Yes. And who's sitting next to me.
Does she have a Porter shirt, too?
She doesn't.
Monica.
Jelly.
Soon.
She did not take the Porter name. She, Monica Stuff, she's a theater professor at University of San Diego, and she's always directing theater. So we went to her, and we're like, would you be interested in adapting It's a Disaster for the Stage? And she said, well, yes. I'm sorry, would you like to say something? I've just been talking.
Oh, no, I was going to say, well, so she was very interested in doing that, but had a lot of strong opinions on kind of the fact that the movie is a very sort of self-contained movie that takes place in this house. Mm-hmm. And so Monica Suft and her co-writer, Kelly Rafferty, wanted to adapt it, but didn't want to replicate it. Because the movie does a really good job of being the movie.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that she really identified about when you watch this movie is this feeling of kind of being closed in. Because basically what's happening is this group of people are having a couple's brunch. And all of a sudden, because there's sort of this sense of that there's like a chemical warfare that's happening, they seal themselves up into this house and they cannot leave. And so what she really wanted to do is to recreate that feeling in a live sort of immersive theater environment. So she was like, how can I do that in a way that makes sense? Because if you're just watching a play on a stage,
you're not
part of that.
Right. Yeah, because the movie's all set in a house and it's eight people who are getting together. And Monica's argument was like, well, if you want to just watch that, you'll just rent the movie. Like, why do you need to go to a theater to watch an exact recreation of a movie?
I like the way she thinks.
You know?
I did good, buddy.
I will agree with you, absolutely.
And we're like, oh, that's a really good point.
And so she was like, started thinking, well, where would be a place where an audience would be in the same space as the actors? You know, where would that make sense? And so quickly that turned into the idea of being at an open mic night at a bar. And the sense that if you're kind of an audience and there's this open mic night, you've got all these different kind of performers, you've got people, you've got musicians, you've got comedians doing stand-up and things like that. And all of a sudden, as a group now, so the actors and the audience, suddenly it's like, uh-oh, things are going down. And we are now sealed into this space.
That's a great spin.
So the characters are all exactly the same, except two of them now own this bar, and two of them are putting on an open mic night. But like all the character dynamics and everything are exactly the same. But you, the audience, like when the guy in the hazmat suit comes in 20 minutes in, you're all now stuck in this bar. And they're actually going to tell like audience members, like, we need help duct taping up the windows. And they're going to like grab people out of the audience.
That's awesome.
So it is immersive and you can kind of participate. But it is not, it's not like the kind of thing where people go grab
you. It's not like a murder mystery dinner.
Yeah. It's not a murder mystery dinner. It's like you can kind of participate in that.
Well, it's kind of like, have you seen Point Break Live?
Those things
are brilliant. So, yeah, I love those kind of things. So I need to see this movie before I see the play.
No, not necessarily.
But I think I'm going to.
I might even argue that it's maybe more interesting if you haven't seen the movie. Because you don't know what's going to happen.
Okay.
If you've seen them, because it's so that, I mean, you'll still love it either way.
You're like, no, I don't want
to
take
it. You should not see the movie, to be clear.
But
see the play, then see the movie.
Plot-wise, if you don't know where this is going, you might find it a little more interesting.
Now, as one of the creators, like, you know, you created the story and wrote and directed the movie, like, when they came with these new ideas of kind of taking it in different areas where you kind of...
You're like, I just want to retain the rights. Let's do this in 20 minutes and move on.
Were you open to the changes or were you kind of like, ooh, you know,
totally
I don't know, I really was...
To be honest, like, it was very, you know, it's very flattering that someone wants to adapt this thing that I wrote. And, like, I was busy with other stuff. And I said, like, look, they included me in the adaptation process only in that, like, they showed it to me. And they're like, well, what do you think? And I gave them some notes. And other than that, I've been very hands-off. Like, I don't
know. They've almost George Lucas'd you out of Star Wars.
So, that's what they've done. I don't
like, these are great like, notes. Trash.
They're like, we're cutting your part, but other than that, everything's dead.
The notes were quite good, I must say. The notes were good.
I don't even know. Like, I'm going to go see it next Wednesday for the first time.
Wait, you haven't seen any rehearsals or
no?
And I know that they're rehearsing tonight, correct?
They are rehearsing tonight, which is why the
awesome. So you're not the hazmat guy anymore.
Well, so... as part of a little fun thing over the 2 weeks of performances from June 14th to June 24th, different people are playing the hazmat suit guy every night.
That's awesome.
And I may or may not
no.
be there.
It's a mystery.
We don't know which night. We don't know which night to get tickets.
June 14th through 24th.
Go every night.
Maybe I will show up.
Well, before we forget to ask, where is this being shown?
Well, this is actually one of the things that's really kind of really cool about this is we were looking for this space, and we thought, well, we could get like a black box space and make it look like a bar or something like that. And we're like, but that's – you don't want to be – in the recreation of a bar and not be drinking. That does not seem like a
nice
idea. I mean, no one wants to do it. So we actually are taking over Golden Road. So there's a
brewery, Golden Road Brewery.
Golden Road Brewery in Glendale. In the back, there's a thing called Chloe's, which is like an event space. But
isn't that the female-owned? It's owned by a woman. It's like the only woman-owned brewery somewhere.
Sure.
I heard something like that.
No, I don't know, actually.
I think it is.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That sounds about right. Is it it's Chloe? Is that why the room's named Chloe?
Maybe.
You know, it's all coming together.
See? I don't know. My wife pointed it out because it was a big deal to her.
That
I don't
sounds
know.
Like,
whatever. Let's sorry. Apologize.
I can tell you, though, it's really
cool. Quit asking all these questions
sorry
about
the sorry for thing. My ADD. Jeez. I apologize for having ADD.
So we're taking over Chloe's at Golden Road. And what's cool about it is that you can get there an hour before the show starts. The show starts today, but you get there at 7.
You get tanked.
And it is included. It with your ticket comes all you can drink beer.
Okay.
All
you wow. Oh, fuck.
Yeah. Soft drinks, everything.
You know, whoever you pull out the duct tape the window is never sitting back down. So,
and they've got, you know.
You realize
like,
that, right?
They've got all this, like, they're pointing.
Yeah, they're going to be part of that play.
IPAs, they've got a lot of things. So there's going to be a lot of slurring among the audience. Oof. But it's going to be a lot of fun.
Man, they're going to start duct taping everything.
And so it's a fully functioning bar that we're actually in. And so that's kind of really, really
that'll be interesting about. To see.
Yeah, I can't wait.
I know, we're definitely excited about
it. I know, I'm going
to. I think I'm more excited to see the audience now.
Yeah.
Can I do a documentary about the
all
audience?
You can drink beer for an hour?
Well, and it's those gold.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, it's not for an hour before the show. It includes during the show.
Oh, fuck.
So it's actually the open bar of everything they have, including wine and whatnot.
Like, there will be
the
waitresses
show.
And waiters. Yes. During the show,
oh, people are
who are also
hammered.
Like in on it, like oh my god, like the bombs have fallen. Mm-hmm. Does anyone need another? Like your waitress will still
round
do
over
your
here
table.
If you need that.
Somebody's gonna get so drunk they're actually gonna think it's real.
And I don't know if you've had these Golden Road beers, but like it's, some of them are like 11%.
Oh,
you see
guys.
The Golden Road,
dude. This is gonna be sloppy as fuck.
I don't know if. You know, if theater goers or people in the theater community enjoy alcohol or not, but you know, or people who like seeing comedy
also
or live.
Also, wine. If you're into wine, then
like, actually, wine. I don't want to spoil anything, but one of the reasons that it's important that wine is included is because there's an element of the show that doesn't.
Oh, this
wine.
Is true.
And so it's sort of integral to the way the show works, I guess.
Is the show is the like the tone or the humor in the show? Is it? Does it play? Would it play to a drunk crowd?
God, I hope so.
Like, is it sort of like? Is it?
It's a dark comedy. It's very like Woody Allen-esque. It's very like, you know, Noises Off or Neil Simon.
Okay,
you know, that's why a lot of people who see the movie think it was a play. So I could. It's a farce in a way, and but I can see how drunk people are going
to
like.
Although it's been translated to this new environment, a lot of the jokes from the movie are in the. Performance. It's not a complete rewrite. It's an adaptation. I guess. Okay.
So have you been rehearsing like in the venue or outside
of
the venue?
Both. So we've been rehearsing in a rehearsal space and also now rehearsing in the venue itself.
So tonight they're like in the
tonight
venue.
This is they're sort of there right now as we speak, making magic happen.
And this depending on where you're sitting, it's not like you're looking at a stage.
Making magic happen.
It's not like you're because I did a walkthrough venue, so it's not like you're all the entire crowd is facing a stage and everything happens on a stage. Like
it's all around you.
It's all around you. It's like Sleep No More. I don't know if you heard about Sleep No More in New York, where it's just like this. You anywhere you look, like something's going on. So you could be sitting at a table in the corner, and at one point, characters sit right next to you and have a scene that maybe if you're on the other side of the room, like people are having to stretch.
And is all that planned ahead of time?
Yeah,
is it
that's
kind of
what
like
they're doing right now.
Find the guy that's wearing.
Yeah, I think so.
And one of the things that I was going to say was that sort of because it's this open mic night, there's going to be sort of different like stand-up comedians, and there's going to be like a musical thing that there's going to kind of change night to night. And
wow.
So some of these are
so it's like a real open mic.
Yeah, exactly. Because
Dude, if I was going to an open mic and then there was like a live theater production, part of me would be like exhilarated and part of me would be like, what the? I just wanted to show this one poem that I've been writing my whole life.
We've been completely lucky to get Vivian Martinez, who's going to be performing on the 17th. And so there'll be other people like announced, you know, as we go. And I
Chad
awesome.
Briggs, right? On the 16th?
Yes, Chad. 15th? I think on the 15th.
I just hope some people wander in. Like people are going to Golden Road and they're like, oh, there's a show. And then they go sit down and they don't realize
they're in the show.
Like it's an open mic night, and they're like, Because nowadays, when you watch political news, you're like, oh, there's maybe nuclear war happening. And you're like, you know, I'm 10% believing that.
Yeah.
Like, I think that
Well, if you say it's like a chemical attack, someone might fucking lose their mind. That shit could happen.
People are going to start posting, like, you know, hashtag... The bombs are falling. Or
especially they had like four or five beers, and they're just like, "What's going on?
What are you talking about?"
That's why I would live my.
Don't give Eddie five beers.
And one of the things that's also great is it's a different. And I think Todd mentioned this, but it's the characters are all the same as the movie, but the actors are different. And so we got some incredibly awesome actors.
Let's talk about the actors and actresses.
Absolutely. So there are eight sort of main characters who are in the movie, and most of them are part of this Real Pros group, and so we're incredibly lucky to get hilarious comedic actors who are really great working together. So this is this is like Peter Holden, Matthew Bellows, Kirsten Haley, Megan Lee Pyle, John Bobek, Alex Bond, Alexa Alamany, and Kendall Horn.
Awesome.
So it's like a really sort of great cast of people.
And I don't even know if the actors know this. I haven't met any of these actors. I'm very excited to see it. But I don't know if the actors even know this. But when I wrote the original script, there's eight characters, and I based them all on the stages of grief. So, like, if you find out you're going to die, like, one person goes into denial.
Right.
One
anger.
Person gets really angry.
Panic.
One person panics.
Right.
And so when we did the feature, like, I told all the actors secretly, like, your denial, your anger.
Oh, and they didn't know.
They didn't know. Really.
That's awesome.
So now I'm really curious to see the interpretations of these actors, you know?
And how did you cast it, out of curiosity? I know Matt's been a guest on our show before. He's a terrific actor, and if he's involved, I know it's going to be good. But big shout out to Matt real quick. But how did you cast it? Like, how did you go about auditions?
Yeah, I think that there was a massive... sort of multi-day, bleary-eyed auditioning process that involved... I wasn't part of that as one of the co-producers, but like Monica...
Of Stone course, because what producer goes to their own audition? Oh, I Hollywood. You're wearing the coat, man. I love it.
So Monica had a really clear idea of kind of who she was looking for. And so... and she ended up, you know, picking a group of people who kind of ended up working together... And so they had basically already had this kind of ensemble dynamic among themselves. And so a lot of times, I guess, when you bring a group of people together in a short period of time, you have to kind of create this ensemble, mm-hmm. and then you have to then also try to create a production with that. And what's really great is that because a lot of them have really worked together...
So they've worked
there's a chemistry.
Before.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Oh, yes.
I'm learning something.
See? You're like, so who are these people that are...
You are so checked out of this whole thing.
It's kind of great.
You're like, whatever.
It's kind of great.
I made the fucking movie. Yeah,
it's like Fight Club, where then you start hearing about other Fight Clubs starting.
It's like, enjoy your play. I made a movie.
Wow, so,
yeah, it does help, because I notice, like, sometimes I'll see, like, when they always do these new sketch shows on TV, they always cast it without... casting the ensemble. That's why the original Saturday Night Live was so good, because they casted the ensemble. I mean, those people had all worked together before.
That's what makes it good. You know. That's what makes it exciting.
True.
Let's talk about a little bit about you guys as artists. Like, how did you get involved in this? What were, like, some of your main inspirations to get, you know, to write a movie or direct a movie, or to produce a play, or to produce other things? Let's talk about your individual credits or your drives.
So I was born and raised in New Orleans, Louisiana.
Yeah.
And I went to school. I knew from when I was a kid, like when I was 11, you know, my dad had a video camera, and I knew all I wanted to do was play with his video camera and make little movies. And I directed my first feature when I was 11. It was Dick Tracy versus Dr. Buggles.
Nice.
The summer that Dick Tracy came out, the Warren Beatty Dick Tracy.
I directed a remake of Back to the Future.
A remake of the original?
The original.
Wow.
Yeah, when I was around that age.
You get that soul today.
Yeah.
You guys should do a film fest.
My brother played all the parts, except for Marty McFly was played by my neighbor. But my brother played all the other parts.
It was like a feature length?
Yeah, I had the video camera. I edited it in camera because I didn't have the equipment to do anything else.
My God.
We would just do
in
sequence, shot for shot remake of Back to the Future.
Can you post the...
Yeah, you can post that on YouTube.
It was on Hi8. I'll have to fucking dig it up.
Have you heard about the Raiders... remake that the kids...
No.
So these kids, when they were like 9 years old, started doing Raiders of the Lost Ark, like scene for scene, shot for shot, I believe. And they just would work on it when they could. And by the time they ended it, when they
were all grown up,
they were like 24 years old. So Spielberg saw it and was like, this is amazing. So Spielberg is now producing like the film version of the
making that.
Making the movie.
That's hilarious.
Wow.
Yeah. That's I think you can even find online. Like
the See movie kids, yeah. Dream big.
Now, wait, what was the movie? Wasn't there a movie where everyone was supposed to submit one scene and they just stitched them all together?
Yeah, Star Wars. Yeah, it was Star Wars. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
So I went to school in Texas, University of Texas.
Hook 'em horns.
USC, man.
Oh.
It still hurts.
Vince Young, man. All over you guys.
That was a magical day. And that's actually where I met George here. And
we're all out of time. No, I'm just kidding.
I met Todd. I mean, Todd was a film major. Came from a little bit of a different background. I was a computer science major, and so that's what I do a lot. That's my sort of day.
But I started a sketch comedy show that was on the student television station, and George, I just thought, was really funny, so I recruited George to be on the show. And George was like the best person on the show, but George had no interest in being an actor or a comedian. And wouldn't your professors like see the show?
Well, what was really funny was, so I'm getting this computer science degree, and this is just something I'm doing for fun with my friends. Like, and we took over the TV station at UT, and there was like no one at home there, so we could just do whatever we wanted to with it, basically. And so I'm in this lecture hall that's one of these ginormous, steep, you know, like out of a movie, that's 700,000 people somehow in this lecture hall, and this philosophy and logic professor's up there, and he's writing on the chalkboard, and he kind of stops, and he looks at me for a second, and he was like, "Are you on a show called The Campus Loop?" And I'm looking around, and everyone around is like stressed out with finals and stuff like that. And I was like, I am, I guess. And he was like, "I really like that show. That's great." I was like, "Thank you." So that's kind of how I met.
Yeah, and so then I graduated, got an agent out here, like right out of school. I got really lucky because I had a short film that I did in class that this agent saw, and he signed me when I was 22.
Wow,
that's amazing!
Wow,
I was delivering pizzas in Austin, and like, I sold the script to Paramount while delivering pizzas, and I quit.
Wow, that's crazy.
It all fell apart soon after.
That's Hollywood.
I moved to LA when I was 22, and I was like, I'm a wonder kid.
Yeah.
And then I learned the harsh realities of what turnaround is. Mm. But so I've been out here ever since for the last 14 years working as a writer. I've directed two features now, and I've always been involved with sketch groups and everything. And I try to get George always involved with all my stuff, but he still just wants to be a computer scientist for some reason.
He'll give it up one day. Don't worry.
I'm almost there. I'm getting close.
He'll be getting his Oscar. He'll be like, I'm designing this app. You guys got it. That's my main bag.
And so I've just been out here ever since doing just, you know, book adaptations and rewrites, and I'm also acting things occasionally.
And you have a novel that has been. Let's talk about that for 2 seconds.
That novel's coming out today.
Today!
It's called Showdown City. It's very Back to the Future 3-esque.
Oh.
It's a modern day Western about people who get stranded in the small town in Nevada that has not evolved really since.
You like people being stranded places.
Yeah, I was just about to say that.
I really do have this
complex about people being not able to escape.
But yeah, it's called Showdown City. I've been working on it for a very long time. It's my bucket list was I always wanted to write a novel, and I had this idea for a movie that no one would ever make because it's a big, expensive Western that they don't make anymore unless you're Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah,
because Westerns don't do well overseas and they're very expensive, so Hollywood doesn't make them. So I was like, well, I'm just going to write it as a novel, and then maybe one day, because it's based on pre-existing material, Hollywood would actually make it.
Tarantino will make it and shoot it and make a 5-hour film.
Exactly. So yeah, it comes out
today.
That's amazing. You can get it wherever books are sold. It's called Showdown City.
Yeah.
And then George teaches computer
science. Yeah, George, talk about your computer background.
You'll see me at the Geek Squad.
So I'm a computer science professor.
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
But one of the things that's interesting is that when I was at like 13, I worked at a radio station in Houston, Texas, and it was like this AM talk radio station. And they had, this is, I guess, 1994 or something like that. I was maybe 15 or 14. They had a call-in radio program called CompuTalk. And this is like pre-internet computer radio. So I just love that. I love being at the radio station.
You're like, I was there before
exactly.
This whole radio
craze.
People
would call in and be like, you know, I'm having trouble with my WordPerfect discs. They're not installing correctly. I can get up to disc 18 of 25, but then...
Now, are these 3.5-inch floppies really going to last?
Yeah, you're like, should I go with the 3.5-inch or the 5.25? I'm trying to figure out where I want to go.
I'm solid with the 5.25. I don't know about these 3.5 inches.
George is now a professor at UCSD. He gets, like, National Science Foundation grants. He travels around the world, like, speaking at conferences. But still, if he's around anyone for more than 20 minutes, they're like, I'm having this email, like, forwarding problem.
it's true. I felt, you know, the worst part was I was in D.C. and Senator Clinton was asking me about her email. I feel like I have some really bad advice.
No, but everyone always asks George for, like, my Windows 95 won't start up right. Could you look at it? Like,
why do you have Windows 95?
And he's like, sure.
And I will say, I love it when my parents, you know, they keep this list that's kind of growing for when I get home to fix stuff up. And the thing that's interesting is, as time goes on, I know less and less how to fix anything, because you can't fix anything anymore. And it's very dissatisfying when you tell people, they're like, you know, my Skype is not working with my whatever. And you're like, oh yeah, that's completely busted. I'm like, what can I do to fix that? And they're like, I just
buy a new one.
Get a whole nother thing. Yeah. Get a whole nother thing. And they're like, well, can I get a new RAM chip? And like, no, those days are gone.
No, that's done.
It's just, that's over, you know.
No, they want to buy you, they want you to buy the whole new thing.
And so when I got to college, there was a radio station in the same building as my dorm. And so I was like, I'm going to go there. And I learned that I don't know much about music at all.
That's right, KVRX.
This was KVRX. And they were like, we're going to program you from 1 to 3 a.m. So you get to pick your songs, you know.
That's perfect.
And I was like, this is great. You know, I'm like in the radio business. And
they had like an obnoxious slogan, like, it was like, we don't, if you've heard of it, we won't play it, or something like
that. Yeah, they were very into, like, pots and pans music, where it was just, like, it sounded a lot like
this
pots
is pre-hipster. And pans. Pre-hipster.
Yeah, it was, like, proto-hipster.
Damn, I missed.
And so, I was sort of like, well, this isn't, you know, working out so well, and then my buddy Todd was like, well, we've got this TV station to deal with, and I was like, oh, well, let's go there.
It's funny that you work with computers, and you're into computer science and all that stuff, but you keep finding yourself in radio stations and TV, and now you're producing plays.
Yes.
Like, your body is telling you to go here.
It's amazing, though, I will say, sort of teaching these huge lecture courses and things like that is such a performative thing that... It's good. It's helpful to know computer science, I will put it that way. But sort of being able to perform and improv is, like, incredibly important. Because I'll give you an example. I was giving this lecture to this graduate course. It's, like, very advanced material. And I'm going through it, and I made all these detailed notes for this thing. And then I realized I had forgotten to finish the notes. And so we have, like, 25 minutes. I got this lecture with 150 people in there. And I flip the page, and I'm sort of... And I just... I got nothing. I got 20 minutes of airtime to kill, effectively, you know? And so I was like, I was like, you know.
Any questions?
I was like, yeah. I was like, you know, I feel like I've been talking a lot. Like, I'm going to hear from you. I was like, I'm going to flip this classroom right now.
I'm going to come sit down there. Someone
exactly.
else get up here and talk.
And I was like, you know what? I want you to break into small groups. I'm going to give you the next 20 minutes. I want you to talk. And just so I don't kind of pollute the process, I'm going to take off. You know?
So, really?
Yes.
You just left?
I did, but it was an
that's pretty baller, man.
Classroom exercise. And
wow,
stuff, you know,
that's awesome.
Which is just to say, I think having an improv background is helpful in anything you do in life.
Oh yeah, I think everyone should take improv just to learn how to listen. Because most people.
Well, wait, hold on. The lesson you just
exactly,
told me
just
was
now,
like, let other people listening. Do it and get the fuck out of there.
The one time. Lots of little improv.
I like the way you think, man.
Lots of little improv. So my wife Monica is she's the theater professor at the University of San Diego and does all of these creative plays. And so all through grad school would make sort of plays and Todd would come up to Berkeley and see them and things like that. And so every year or every other year she's making plays with students. And so sort of trying to create an adaptation in a professional theater environment is something that's kind of pretty natural.
And it's such a fresh idea, too. A lot of people haven't experienced that concept of being in the play or being in the movie or whatever it is as it's happening, which is awesome.
And the hope, you know, is that if the production is successful, it's like we now have this book for the adaptation and we can just say, like, anyone who wants to put it on anywhere in the country or the world, like, let us know.
Pay us this low one-time fee.
Yeah. All you need is a bar. Like, you need a bar, you know, space or a theater space
that
looks
smart.
Like a bar.
That's really smart.
Because any small town can do it.
And I would say, though, that, like, we're setting the bar quite high in the sense that, you know, with the open bar and everything else, it's kind of like, I feel like you've got to bring it, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you can get everybody drunk.
But yeah, so for what it's worth, it's a disasterlive.com is basically got all the...
Spell it out because people are dumb. Let's be honest.
ITSA disasterlive.com.
It's a disaster life.
I have a question. How did you come up with the title?
It just came to me. Oh, there was an OK Go song called It's a Disaster. And right after Katrina, they did a live album with Bonorama, like this brass band. And one of the songs that I thought was funny, they covered. They did like Rock and Roll Suicide and a couple of like other covers with, it was like, you know, the pop band and then this brass band. But then they covered their own song, It's a Disaster, that I always thought was funny. Because I love Bonorama, and then it was just stuck in my head when I was working on the title or the screenplay. I was like, "Oh, that's a good title." So I kind of did it as like a temporary thing, and then just everybody liked it, and I never changed it again.
Wasn't there though a book called "It's a Disaster"?
So there is a manual, a self-help, not self-help, but like a disaster survival,
yeah, well, a survival guide
called
things.
"It's a Disaster." And when we announced the movie, we got contacted by them, and they said, "Awesome! Can we send you copies?" of the book for everyone in the crew. Like, so we gave him out as rap gifts to kill two birds with one stone there.
Nice.
And I also wrote it into the screenplay, and there was a scene in the script that we shot where like David Cross takes the disaster book because the neighbor played by me who comes over is like he's like the doomsday prepper guy who has the hazmat suit and he has the book. We ended up cutting out of the movie because just for time, but I think it might even be in the play.
Oh,
the stage version.
Yeah, we've got copies.
You guys have a copy of the book?
We do have a copy.
I have a box of like 100 in my garage. Yeah. But the It's a Disaster people were very nice. Like, they were very excited.
Yeah, usually you get contacted by someone. It's like, cease and desist.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't use the name. But instead they're like, here, pass this out to everybody.
But the name was very, you know, when we got distribution, some distributors were wary because they're like, you know, you're just handing critics. Like, critics can just be like, yep, it is. And some of them did.
It was...
Oh, really?
But most of them were like, it's not. So that's good.
It became the anti-pun. Every single review of that movie was like, it is not a disaster. Yeah. And everyone thought
certainly
they were incredibly
not.
Clever doing that.
But then a couple jerks, bloggers, were just like, yep. And if you look at like...
There's always some of those.
Are you saying there's mean-spirited bloggers out
there?
Yeah,
well, if you go on like the Amazon reviews right now at home, a lot of the...
You know the funny thing is, though, like, I mean, have critics really stopped people from going to see that thing? It's like, you know, with music, it's like everybody talks about getting on, you know, with bloggers and getting those reviews. And it's like, really? I've never looked and been like, huh, he got 4 stars. I'm definitely going to buy that. Or, ooh, he got 1 star. I'm not going to buy that album.
Yeah,
I'm not
going to
see that show. Even if it's a shitty movie that's been torn apart by every critic out there, I'm like... Huh, maybe I kind of still want to see it now.
Now
I'm more curious, you know? So sometimes it works against them.
I especially love things like Rotten Tomatoes when there's an enormous disparity between the audience rating and the critic rating. The critics are like, this is a horrible movie.
Yeah, and then 85% audience would be like 98%.
100% in on the... Like a movie like Triple X, you're like, audience rating 95%.
Yeah,
right.
And so, but yeah, we're hoping that people are going to kind of enjoy it. We're doing the show actually starting on the 14th or the 17th, and then for another week, so the 21st to the 24th.
So how many shows total?
There's going to be eight shows over 2 weeks.
Okay. So it's
You're doing two a day?
No. It's going to be every night. The show starts.
So just one show
eight.
A night?
Yeah.
Because you guys are going to trash that fucking place.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean,
that place is
going to
be destroyed.
It's going to be, I'm not going to, you know, punk rock kind of hotel situation.
Yeah.
It's just the start. I mean, that's 20 minutes in.
Yeah.
Fuck. That's awesome. What a great idea. And how much are tickets? And what, like, how do people get them one more time?
To get tickets, they're at itsadisasterlive.com. And tickets are normally $45 or $55. There's like a premium seating that's a little bit closer in. Again, that includes some food and includes an open bar. And but we have a promo code, which is Wake Up, and if you use that, you get a discount on the ticket.
You see that, Eddie?
Oh, that was nice.
That was nice. That's our first
Wake Up,
dude. They're our first promo code.
Wow.
Are we having a moment? This is nice.
Wow.
This is a feel good interview.
And also, isn't it on Facebook and social media?
It is also on Facebook.
If you don't want to go to analog. It's a disaster.com. You can go to Facebook page. Yeah. It's a disaster.
If you're too young to know about the web or what that is.
Yeah, all you know is social media, then just go.
So the web is this thing they used to store data sets on. Now it's
really
But no, it's on a bunch of things. So it's like IAD_live at Twitter, and then it's on Instagram, but they're all also linked off of It's a Disaster Live.
Yeah. Are you gonna videotape any of this? Post it on Facebook or YouTube?
We have teasers. A set of videos that were actually created by Todd Berger that are going to be posted to kind of social media that include pictures of the cast and teaser information about what's going on. And then the cast actually made a couple videos that are going to be posted in the next couple days as well to kind of...
Could you answer his question though? Are you going to record the show?
Are we going to record the show? Oh no!
Because nice. I'm curious.
You've got to be there.
Nice.
Be there. It's like one of these things that you've got to experience.
Experience.
Yes.
Those things are rare. You're getting people away from their computers and their phones.
Have you ever heard how in Broadway apparently they always take the original cast of any Broadway play or musical and they go in with like high definition, like the best cameras available at the time, and record the original cast performing the musical, and then they put it in a vault. Like, no one's allowed to see it.
But really?
Yeah. This is
just to have it?
A strategic vault?
Yeah,
for posterity?
Like, it's some, like, Broadway organization that wants to have, for posterity, a recorded version of that performance. And it goes back, like, 50 years, apparently. And I guess if you want, you can, like, go to the library of Broadway or whatever.
You guys should create the West Coast version of that. You could be your own time capsule. Seriously.
But we could do it with like our camera phone when we go to live performances. It's a discounted kind of
dude,
operation.
Dude, you could just tell everybody
just
to
periscope the whole thing.
Yes, yeah, periscope the entire thing.
Periscope the whole thing. That's my new motto.
That's amazing. It must have been an amazing experience to see your story come from the seed and then see it fully developed and now see it as a play.
Oh, like, yeah. This is very exciting.
Well, usually once you get the movie made, you're like,
yeah.
I did it.
I'm done.
I did it. And now you're like, it's just like, wow.
But it's just been really great. Like, I mean, I've heard from people who take like theater classes or just acting classes in LA. They've told me like I went to class that night. Yeah, and we had to pick a scene because my movie strangely has strong female characters, right? Who have like monologues. So they're like, yeah, I went to this acting class last night, and everyone had to bring in a monologue, and a girl brought in a scene from it.
That's awesome.
And I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, like, because it's one of the few movies that have strong female characters that give monologues.
Well, it's great, too, that you wrote it, because you had to write it with it in mind of, like, I want to try to get this made and shot.
Exactly.
So you had to put it in one place, and you had to make it strong character-driven type stuff.
Exactly.
You couldn't rely on heavy action sequences or explosives. Or you had to, like, I mean, that sort of created that.
Yeah, the limitations.
The limitations what, created
totally.
It's that. Yeah, I think what's kind of... You know, the hope again here is just that we've been able to kind of keep a lot of what was in the movie that's really great in just a new environment. And so I think that's kind of what, like, Monica really set out to do. In,
plus a super drunk audience.
That was from day one.
Yeah.
Will any of the actors be drinking?
Good question. You know, I like that the guest asked probably the best question of the night.
Because that one night when I'm the hazmat guy, I'm going to be...
Does anyone really know who's drinking in life? I mean, really? Do any of us really
that's
know
true.
Who's,
no,
who around
no.
us is drinking?
Unless you get super sloppy like Eddie probably will be.
Well, they've told me when I'm hazmat guy, because the character only shows up for 5 minutes and then leaves. And you're not allowed to come back in because you never see the character.
Yeah.
So I get to just go sit in the bar and drink all I can drink. Golden Road.
That's
why
right.
not?
Great. It's a win-win.
It's kind of a win-win for everyone. Okay.
And then you come in drunk later just hucking DVDs of the movie at people. Fucking watch the movie.
I was going to ask that too. Can people buy the movie afterwards?
That's a great idea.
You should sell it. You have a merch table set
maybe
up.
Maybe I'll bring my book too.
Dude, you totally should.
This is
set up a merch table with DVDs. And
trust me, I've been that guy for 13 years, man. Yeah. Shit works.
With a musician background. I'm
totally.
I'm so surprised you thought of that.
Well, that's how us road people make our money.
That's
merch table.
That's where the big bucks are.
And if you
happen
to be at Golden Road, just walk right in. And
yeah.
Get a ticket and join the fun.
Now, is there any plan to also have the show tour at all? Because I'm sure the response is going to be awesome.
I think there's...
Like, you can't just stop it after this. I'm sure there are listeners around the country that are like, I don't live in L.A. How am I going to get the chance to experience this?
I think if you want to make this in your city, just... contact us.
See, you're passing up the buck. You're like, I'll be outside.
Send a big check.
Well, no, I mean, I don't know. I would think it's one step at a time right now. But if it goes well, why not?
Yeah,
I mean,
you just might have another Point Break Live on your hands. You know?
Yeah, seriously. I mean, Point Break Live and Terminator 2 Judgment Play, which was...
I've seen both of those.
Last year I did my friend who was in the original. He had done Point Break Live. He was Gary Busey in Point Break Live. Yeah. We did Summer School.
Oh,
my God.
We adapted Summer School.
I remember
to the
you
stage
told me that. I was
about
so
a year ago.
You told me after the fact.
And we had the writer guy. The guy who wrote Summer School is the same guy who wrote Full House.
Oh, wow.
And what was his name? I can't remember his name. Jeff Johnson or something? I don't know. He came to the Summer School thing. And then he brought Chainsaw and he brought like three of the different actors to the show.
Wow.
To Summer School. And I got to meet the foreign exchange student with the big knockers. Remember her?
Yeah.
I got to meet Miss of a lot of vagina. She was a lot of vagina in Austin Powers. Mm-hmm. I got to meet like a lot of the cast members from the original Summer School, and they all loved it because they thought we were going to make fun of it, but we didn't.
That's awesome.
It was kind of, it was like, so.
Well, the cool thing about what you're doing is like your movie is like a cult classic, and now it's going to be realized as a play. And it's still kind of underground. Like,
yeah.
That's what's awesome about it. It's going to be a new story for a lot of people. Usually when you see these kind of plays where they're so interactive with the experience, you know what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's like,
at
say
every
the
stage.
Line. Say
yeah.
the line I want you to say.
Totally. And so that's what's like super novel about this approach. It's awesome.
Yeah, I definitely think that if you've seen the movie, or if you haven't seen the movie, I think you'll enjoy it. Sort of.
All right, so give me this straight up. I should wait to watch the movie?
If I were in your shoes, okay. I would wait to watch them.
All right, I'm going
to
do that.
Wait, because you want to experience it live. You want to see what's happening.
I mean, because you have a very rare opportunity. Like, anyone can go watch the movie, but you'd be able to watch the story unfold before your own eyes.
And experience it.
I'm going to do that.
The movie compares, I guess. You can do a comparative analysis between the movie and that.
I'm excited. This is going to be awesome.
Yeah.
One more time, where can people buy tickets?
It's adisasterlive.com. Go check out itsadisasterlive.com.
And the dates are, what are the running
dates?
Eight performances.
14th to the 17th, 21st to the 24th.
Of June.
And it's IAD Live on Instagram as well.
What was that special promo code?
Promo code.
Wake up.
Exclusively for your listeners.
Wake up.
What does that promo code get you?
It gets you 20%
three shots.
Off.
Dude, you're higher.
Off.
You are.
20% off everything.
20% off the whole ticket.
That's
great.
Wow.
That's
great.
Wow.
So with every sip of beer
you must
you
like
take,
us.
You're like, I got 20% off.
And it's actually 20% off all the calories of the food in that beer.
Wow.
That's a
so you wake up feeling
now
better.
Now you're just pushing it.
That
you're
was a special deal we got with Goldberg to do that. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'm going to be there. Eddie, you got to be there too, drinking
possibly.
And having a good time.
If I find a babysitter.
You will. We will. I promise. We'll make it happen. Guys, you've been
myself.
Great guests. I mean,
no,
seriously.
Thank you.
And you've been a great co-host. Todd's looking over at Eddie. He's like,
oh, Todd's co-hosted before?
No. Uh-huh. He's been asking questions to his partner over here.
All right. Now it's time for traffic on the fives. Here we go. The 101. There's an accident at the 110.
Well, you guys are going to have to come back and tell us about your future projects
and absolutely.
Endeavors.
We'll do.
Please.
Thank you.
Thanks for having
me. On behalf of Eddie and I, we'll see you guys next week.
All right.